Our main reason to put everything up right now is labor cost increase. Yeah. And anyone not aware of this is huge.
Yeah.
It's humongous because the minimum wage. So we're one of the only industries where people with no degree in what they're doing can earn 45 grand to wake up and serve tables. Right?
Yeah. Welcome to the Hospitality Podcast.
Where's the lamb sauce?
Come on, man.
I just need a...
This is the lamb.
Where's the lamb sauce?
Presented by Arthur Gomez.
God damn, I just spent $8,000 on some f***ing wine.
And Quentin Wind.
What are you?
An idiot sandwich.
So pour yourself a glass, because we're diving into the world of restaurants, kitchen and bar. The Hospitality Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Breaking the Cork. So today, a new episode with a very special guest, as usual. Today, we have a true entrepreneur from the world of wine, hospitality, and I would say nightlife.
Yeah.
As well.
Nightlife, bars, restaurant,
Michael Sager, guys.
No clubs.
No clubs.
Yeah, I don't like stuff that's after 1 a.m.
No, no clubs.
1 a.m., nothing good happens after 1 a.m.
It's too much responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you for coming. Again, guys, before we start, please give us a little support by giving a little rate on... Shopify.
You always say
Spotify. There we go. Buy our merch, which doesn't exist, but on Spotify. It really helps the channel to continue. Again, thanks for coming. How are you doing today?
Pretty good.
You guys can't really see it, but Michael is very fancy, very nice.
Yeah, I'm going to a beautiful concert, Max Richter.
Nice.
In the South Bank, which I'm excited about.
Cool.
Yes.
So we're not going to take too much of your
time
today.
We don't want you to be late for it.
So Michael, can you tell us a bit more about like your journey into the world of wine? Where are your journey from?
Originally from Switzerland.
Switzerland.
German side, in between Basel, Zurich, Bern. It's called Mittelland, in the middle.
I've just been to Bern.
Bern is nice.
Oh, so you're not from Bern?
No. I studied in Bern.
You started in Bern.
Yeah, so by way of studying, I studied first Latin, and then I stopped to do Spanish linguistics, literature, and medieval history. Mm. And when I finished that, I moved to London. And I don't know, I didn't want to move to London, but I was on a holiday and I decided to stay. It's quite impulsive.
What age?
I was 20, 21 maybe.
2021?
Yeah, it's 20 years now, so 21. I'm 41 now, so it's been 20 years ago.
Doesn't look 41.
No,
at all.
Not at all.
Come on. Wait until I have a proper shave. It's a trick of growing a beard. You grow a beard, and I do it all the time.
Oh, man,
you grow a beard long. Everyone
nothing,
is like, you look, you know, old.
Older.
Yeah.
And then you shave it. Like, oh, you look young.
I can't grow a beard. I'm 32. So.
Look at us. We all have no chance. Not even a try.
I moved over originally thinking, like, being excited by the world of maybe music, living in Camden. And I picked up, because I had to pick up work, in a bar there. That was quite late night, and did that for a year or two. Like, you know, living in a, like, we were dossing. I was actually living, squatting in the beginning.
Oh wow, really? Okay.
Horrible. Yeah. But yeah, you know, the journey in coming into London is like manifold, right? You can like come and study and do that thing.
Yep.
Or yeah, well, I came in as like not really having a job and then having to like, yes, DOS, it's called dossing. You would like sleep on someone's like couch and that kind of shit. And
really?
Yeah, you couldn't pay rent. But then got a job on 580 at a time, I remember.
580?
Yeah, 582 was minimum wage. That's what you would get. There wasn't much tips or anything.
Wow.
But luckily, there was someone in that bar who took their bartending seriously. And they told me about this group called Match Bar Group. That was in 2005. They were talking about Match Bar Group. And said, hey, you should go there. You're really into cocktails. I'm like, okay, I'll go there. So I applied for a job. They were like asking, do you know how to free pour? Do you know, like, and I'm like, yeah, of course. I didn't. But I wanted the job. It looked serious.
Yeah. I did the fake same kids. In Australia as well.
You have to pretend.
Yeah.
You know how to make cocktails? Yeah.
They were dressed like this, you know, like they were wearing bow ties. They were, because they had a bar in their portfolio of bars that was called Milk and Honey. And at the time, that was one of the world's most serious bars. Little did I know that 3 years later, I would be the head bartender of Milk and Honey. I made it quickly up the ladder because it was a company that incentivized learning.
Mm.
So you, instead of earning 580, quickly you start at 650, 750, 850. You will get to 950, which was a lot at the time, plus tips, just by being good at holding your information.
Fair.
And there would be trips you get to fly to, I don't know, Bacardi, you fly to like Kentucky, those kind of things. And for me, it came easy to like keep information. Mm. I have a good memory. I'm blessed with a good memory. And so, I, you know, it was all like, oh, what's the mash bill of like Woodford Reserve? I'd be like, well, it'd be like 72% corn, 18% rye, da, 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 which is not correct, but I'm just So there's, you know, you would have to know everything about spirits. And it was the people from the WSET who were teaching those courses once a month with very serious writers. Like Dave Broom will come and talk about whiskey. Mm. It's serious. It was good.
Nice.
And take it very seriously because it was classic cocktails. So you need to have a biblical knowledge of, canonical knowledge of cocktails. And even now, I still really like classic cocktails because you, Milk and Honey was like probably at the epitome of that, but it's a very serious bar where it's all about just the execution of having your coldest glass, never touch a bottle twice, look up, look at your customer, that kind of thing. It's serious.
It is.
There was like rules of how you should be, and it wasn't a hotel bar, right?
Mm.
But that, London has got like two or three schools of bartending, and I would say the Match Bar, the Milk and Honey School, has kind of survived. These people kind of dispersed when that group went bust. That group went bust in just after the crash, so like 2009.
Okay, the group of Milk and Honey?
Yeah, so 2010. Well, Milk and Honey survived, but some of the other members' clubs didn't. Mm. And then it was weird because I wanted to learn about wine. That was in 2008. I said like, oh, I would like to do my diploma because they forced me to be like a somm. They fired the somm. I was in this members club called the East Room, three floors, 96 wines by the glass, jokes, all new world wine, so easy to learn. And I was like, okay, I'm in. Why I not? Do my diploma if you pay for it. They're like, yeah, didn't happen.
Really?
The group so I was stuck with paying for the diploma. Diploma was definitely a helpful thing. I wish a lot of people would take more seriously. Because now it's all just natural wine, but no one really knows why. And it's good to understand what normal wine is.
Yeah.
So I did that. I became their wine person. That members club burned down in 2008. They moved me to Milk and Honey as the head bartender. Mm-hmm. I lasted a year to move to Quo Vadis, became their wine buyer. This is before Quo Vadis started being with Jeremy Lee, but it was still a very good restaurant.
Quo Vadis, the private members club?
Yes.
In Seoul.
So I was there. It was an impeccable team at the time.
Okay.
Very, really? It was one of the best teams. Yeah, Tales of the Cocktail gave us like best bar team. And it was good. It was an award-winning bar at the time.
Wow, okay.
And moved on to the US. Because I really wanted to learn more about wine. I felt it was like, well, I'm not happy here until 3 a.m. shifts, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
So I had this idea of moving to California. I don't know why. And I moved to California with no visa. Yeah. Gave up everything, packed everything and moved. And
for how long?
I lived there for 2.5 years.
Ah, yeah.
Whereabouts? 2012.
San Francisco.
San Francisco.
So was working there. First, I got a cocktail job in a good bar. Then, because you need fake documentation, which is easy to obtain.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, back in the days, I guess, or even
still,
today, I reckon.
Yeah. It's just the problem is you can't leave, right?
Yeah, you're there.
You can't leave. You can't tell anyone about it. You can hire a car, you can rent a flat, you can open a bank account, but you can't leave.
Oh, you stayed there for 2.5 years
Yeah.
Without going back to see your family.
And I was there until, I guess, 2010, 2011. So I would be 2012, I can't remember. There was a guy I worked for, Rajat Par, and that's what got me more into wine, because he's like a very serious... he was about to publish his first book, I think. No, the book came out way later. But he was about to make his first wine. But he had this place called... he was the wine director for a very serious Michelin star group called Michael Mina Group. And they had like, I don't know, 13 outlets with a couple of 2 stars, like a lot of 1 stars.
Yeah.
And a serious wine list in each outlet. And I became the bar director of a place called RN74, which is Route Nationale 74. So it's all the Burgundy vines. And I learned a lot about Burgundy. And that's in the time when there was the second boom of .com and whatnot. Yeah. And serious companies like the Twitter head office would come in and that kind of thing. And they would spend $5,000 on a lunch.
Wow.
Mostly on wine. So you get to taste every serious wine. And that's a job that inspired me to go further with wine.
Yeah.
So I went to Latin America, did a wine harvest in Argentina and in Chile. Went to volunteer in Bolivia and in Colombia, coffee farm. But I moved back here for the Olympics, so whenever that was.
2012.
I waited till the Olympics were over because I was like, well, I don't know. I'm not going to be able to maybe find something nice to live or etc. And I moved back, took a job at Happiness Forgets. It was like a part-time job. I knew I could do it. It was a nice job to meet people in Shoreditch. And I met a lot of people there.
Do you have any idea you want to grow your business in the future?
That was the idea. Yeah. Myself and my ex, who was with me also in America, we decided that it would be, she took a job at the Hawksmoor and I took a job at, because he allowed you to be part-time.
Yeah.
At Happiness. And it's cool. It's early finishes. It closes at 11:30 or whatnot.
Okay. Nice.
And no responsibility and okay-ish money. And so we decided to do a pop-up fairly quickly after that. And the pop-up was held somewhere in Shoreditch in a building that's now a hotel. But it was a derelict building. It took them 10 years to even get the planning to develop. And we did a pop-up in there called Wine Thursdays, and that's now 12 years ago. And that pop-up was pouring very serious wine with a cash margin of like £1 or £2 a glass. Mm. But like very serious wine. Wine that would be 100 quid a bottle. We would add, I don't know, 10 or 11 quid on the bottle. And open it, and that's it. Profit would be maximum £2 a glass. But you know, Instagram wasn't really a big thing yet, so we had a Tumblr. My ex, she was quite smart at Instagram, and so I was like, okay, let's try and do that. We did it as a pop-up. We did it for a few weeks, and it worked. It got traction. People were coming from all over London. It wasn't. It was before all these other pop-ups. It was quite a disruptive thing to do, I guess, at the time. Then a few months later, I was like, I would need to find money to open a place. So I went to my family to borrow for, ask for a loan.
Okay.
And ask for a loan just big enough to sign a lease somewhere on Hackney Road. That was a former racist pub, a B&P pub called the British Lion.
Are we talking about your place? You have so the Saigon where you founded in 2013?
And we got a pitch. It wasn't even on the market. It was on Supla to be an A3, an A1 licensed shop. The landlord didn't want it to be a pub anymore.
Okay. Yeah.
And we're like, well, it's clearly got a license, so let's do that.
Yeah.
And that place we built on a shoestring, like sanding the floors ourselves, building the bar top ourselves. So it's a lot of work. But if you have nothing else to do, you can do that.
Yeah,
so,
that's like, true. Especially so the first business you do, you just want to get
into
it.
And I recommend that. Like, I bought everything secondhand.
Yeah.
A Winterhalter glass washing machine secondhand. Everything secondhand. Mm. So I spent like, I don't know, all in less than 100, which is now
100K?
Hard. Hard to do. And that money we quickly we made back. That's the magic. If you work in a place, the first year, because we're not really doing more sales now than we did then.
Yeah.
It was busy then, it's busy now. It's the same shit.
It's always like busy during the evening, you know, it's difficult to get a table. And at the same time, it's, I feel like the space is great because it's not too big, but it's not too small.
No.
But it's enough when you have like a couple of table, he feels already busy.
Yeah.
I mean, so you want to get in and get your bottle and, you know.
No, it's been, we got lucky. There was nothing else around there except, I guess, Lyle's opened a year later. The Clove Club opened just that year.
Yeah.
And there were two places that I looked up to, chefs who I had a good connection with. And it was pretty good to, like, be there at the right time. You know, there was nothing else around.
But don't you think it's maybe better for street to have a bit more business, so I can, I guess, you create some
that
energy.
That street still doesn't have any business.
Yeah.
The business I'm talking about is in Shoreditch. You know, one is in the town hall, is now a 2 Michelin star, and the other one is, they're both 50 best, right? Yeah. So that, I didn't know that at the time. Mm. Neither of them really. You know, there were casual restaurants they could go in for lunch, and we would go a lot.
That's true. So, but don't you think like Hackney now, we're getting more and more bars opening in the streets, and now Shoreditch is a bit like losing this hype?
What's changed is that the crowd in Shoreditch is definitely not...
It's changing now.
It's touristy. Yeah.
Well, it's just not people who really live around, so that they move in for the weekend. And I'm glad I don't have a bar in Shoreditch, frankly.
Yeah.
I think it does need a really good cocktail bar. It needs something. We looked at a site there,
but
and I was like, no.
Prices are so,
it was opposite.
So expensive.
It wasn't back then. But
Which
do you know
are you
of any
about?
Nice place in the evening on Redchurch Street that you go to? No.
No.
You know just about.
So else.
They all finish, but that's what I mean. They finish exactly on that square where the tea building is, and that's it.
Yeah.
So that's no. Yes, you have Smoke and Go. Yes, you have Lyle's. Yes, you have Soho House. Yes, you have the Shoom. But they're all within a minute walk from each other. Anything past Old Street, what's it called? Old Press,
Old Press, yeah.
Or like a Jolene, that yeah. corner, good luck. Yeah. So we were going to look at the corner where Brick Lane finishes, and that area has also not become anything. So good decision. Yeah. Sometimes good decisions, sometimes bad ones.
Yeah, that's
but
true. Yeah,
that one we got lucky. Because Hackney Road has also not kicked off, but at least it's in between areas where there's people who want to live there. And, you know, London Fields popped.
London Fields is great now.
I guess, you know, like they now have so many, we're a victim of our own success. There's so many wine bars.
It's a great area, I love it. But with the pork, etc., for example, Yuki Bar, I've been there like a couple of months. It's lovely, the food is great, the service is super. But it's very, like, it's hiding, like, in an arch. If you don't know about it, you will never, like, pass
busy.
By. But it's busy. Yeah, it is.
I was just there a couple of nights ago. I love that place.
So you can create this vibe, you know, even if it's still, like, not busy. I don't know.
Word of mouth, the type of people you're going to attract. And are these people connected? If they are, then you've won the jackpot, really.
Wait, that area also has just people with money living there. Yeah, young professionals.
Of course.
On easy six figures, not in my line of work. And they're spending money. It's fascinating. And they don't live on Hackney Road, I can tell you that.
No, of course.
So they live north of London Fields. They love it. It's a vibe. Yeah. The Beauvoir, all of that. Yeah. And so since lockdown, everything changed. Like,
of course.
People now don't want to really leave their neighbourhood.
No.
And that's something that was unforeseeable. And I'm okay with that. But I've also lost two businesses over it. Yeah. So it's like, you know.
So if you had to open a new one today, where would you go?
Either Kingsland Road or...
Kingsland Road, really?
Yeah, you're in between Haggerston and Dalston and the Beauvoir, and all the areas have money, and you're right in the middle. Late licenses, no neighbours, you can do whatever. So that would be for like a cocktail bar, even though there's so many already, doesn't matter.
There's a lot, that's what I was going to say. But
could be another one, a good one. I mean, there's other good ones, but you know, there's space.
That's true.
Or maybe just like, not the Beauvoir, I've never lived there, but I like the area.
I was going to say the Beauvoir, it's, I mean, from... like outside perspective for your on your brand, it looks like they're matching like a bit your brand, you know, this area. No, but you know, like it's a nice area, it's very chilly.
I'm telling
London
you, it's
vibe.
Different, it's different. There's so much money around there. I parked a car there the other day to go buy horses in the morning, and it was £8.90 for 1 hour to park. That tells you everything about the area.
£8.90 for like an hour.
No shit, I don't know how, but it's a lot of money. Wow. I'm also done. I'm done opening places. I only opened two places to not go under. I have loans to repay.
Yeah.
So when I sold Fair.
So what's your focus now with, if you're done opening spaces, what's your strategy now then?
Stabilize and get my time back.
So personal time back?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So more of like a
lifestyle. Just remove complexity. Like so many people don't understand job satisfaction, and I don't understand it neither, but there's this like guy called Simon Sinek who has had a TED talk and other things. That's all the shit like you listen to, and then you open your business and you don't implement it, right?
Yeah.
Because stuff just unravels. But he says that there's like three layers to job satisfaction, and one is like effort over reward. Cool. You can put in a lot of effort and get a lot of reward out of it potentially, right? One day you might make bank. Plenty of people who are really killing it in our industry. Yeah. Some of them are my customers. Amazing.
Yeah.
But I'm not, you know, it's optics.
Yeah, of course.
I look good as a brand, but the businesses are just about making it, and that's okay. Like, that's why I'm doing it. It's a lifestyle business. I love doing it. But it's not like I would ever make massive money with this. They're small sites, each doing 10 grand, 12 grand, 14 grand net. Yeah, you do your maths, how much you can, minimum wage is up, everything is up. There's no money in it. The stress of dealing with landlords, of dealing with the council, someone is not picking up your rubbish. You can't really afford an ops at three sites, right? Yeah. I had four, now I have three. So you deal with everything yourself. And if it's, you got like four bakeries with the same brand, the same identity, the same product, cool. I have different products, different staff, different cultures.
That's the thing, like it's...
And so you, each business has not only its relationships with its customers and its suppliers and its staff.
Yeah.
It's also got that relationship with the other businesses within the, you know, whatever the hierarchy or the structure is. So there's a lot of shit to manage here, like moving money around, borrowing money, and it's complicated. So I don't know. I would feel more rewarded with my time. So, you know, effort or reward, autonomy, and complexity. That's the three pillars. Now I have all the autonomy. That's good. I like it.
You have no investor.
Yeah, it's just too complex.
Yeah.
And I can handle a lot. I'm a fast thinker. I don't mind working hard. Yep. But it's too complex. I don't want that kind of complexity. Mm-hmm. It never stops.
And you never thought about like maybe selling all the hospitality business and just keeping like the imports?
There's no value. I mean, it's not worth the money it's written on. Like the debt still in the business because I sold my lease at fair
to
someone and, you know, it was not a good deal, but I needed to close. It was an area that was going south, or at least I didn't want to change the product to, you know, sell like Heineck and Foster's, and that's what you need to do there. Yeah. It's a big space.
Yeah, it was on Old Street, right?
And it was lockdown really killed it, like bad. No one in the offices. And so we decided to pull the plug. It was the right decision. I definitely don't regret that. It was one of the most challenging, complex processes I've ever done. Like, I don't know, team of three different teams of lawyers. Because it was a sale out of administration. Because there's ways to do it. I never wanted to go in liquidation because that's, you're done. Many people do that. They go in liquidation. They buy the shit back from themselves. It's nasty.
Mm.
I got friends in this industry who are my suppliers. I'm a supplier myself. I can't mess around.
No, you can't do that.
So I had to do it the tough way. And I had a personal guarantee on the bank loan of 350 grand. So you can't pull out anyway. No. Cross debentures, charges on the leases. Wow. So I'm in. So even, you know, I had to just like get out as nicely as I could. Place lost me over, I would say, 700 grand in 4 years. That's a lot of money to lose.
700 grand?
Yeah, and the rest. Wow. I mean, we've written off in the last accounts like 400 grand loss that Segerwald invested in it.
Yeah.
And then the bank loan is 300 something. I took a family loan, another one.
Wow.
So I'll be repaying. And the reason I opened Equal Parts is not just for fun. I mean, yeah, I love the site. The site is beautiful.
It's a great site.
But another risk. Yeah. I had no license. I applied for a license after I got the lease. Very risky.
Ooh, that's
it
risky.
Worked.
Yeah.
But you know, I only opened that business because I needed to continue bringing cash in to pay the loans. It's a risk.
Mm.
And so that's why I opened Bruno, same thing.
I was going to ask, so for what reason you have this mindset, but a year ago you opened Bruno with this lovely little one bar in the middle of Victoria Park? Mm. You've been to Bruno?
Not yet, no. I went to the other Bruno, the cocktail bar.
Yeah, different. Yeah. I've not been to that one yet. No, I mean, that. I don't know. The problem is I have like a really strong sense of like beautiful things. And so Equal Parts, I just knew it needed to happen. I always wanted to do a bar called Equal Parts and it needed to happen. And it was the perfect space for it. And it's 100 meters away from my business. Mm. Definitely, again, super stressful. This happened whilst I was closing down fair.
Yeah.
Whilst I was selling the lease. And I had to negotiate everything and start building. But we opened as a wine shop and a coffee shop because we didn't have a license, right? And then applied. Then we had neighbors complaining, objecting. Then we got 9:30 p.m. Then drama with the neighbor. Now we resolved that drama. And now we finally have a normal license. But saying that, it was not an easy journey. So that took a year to get going. And the Equal Parts is only now starting to kick. Because, you know, if you keep opening and closing different times, people get confused.
Yeah, exactly.
Do coffee, no coffee. Do pastry, no pastry. Mm. And then, oh no, let's push for a bar that's serious and worldwide renowned. And because that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
I want to do a serious bar.
Yeah.
But people didn't know that game plan because you have to play ball.
Yeah.
And the playing ball was, let's get our license and stick to it. But, you know, you can't communicate that because otherwise they object from the beginning.
That's the problem.
So now we're there, we have a bar. But
nice.
And Bruno was more because I knew I wanted to close Paradise Row.
Okay.
And there was kit to transfer, there was stuff, there was equipment.
Yeah.
And I kept on talking to the landlord there for a year and a half and it happened at the same time. And it wasn't a high risk business. I don't have like a long lease or anything. And it really... small, inexpensive fit out, like 30 grand.
Yeah.
30 grand to make Bruno?
And it made that money back in, I don't know, a few weeks.
Yeah.
With the kitchen in the back?
No, initially we just sold some wine.
Okay.
The kitchen is actually a break-even kind of thing. It's a platform for chefs to show their cooking.
To pop up chef.
And we pay them well. That's why we get good ones.
Nice.
And we make the money on the wine. But it's a good business. It was smart to open it. Worth the risk, I guess, you know, to transfer money and people around.
Mm.
And then, but it's been non-stop. If you think of it, in 2 years, I had to close two places and open two. That's a lot.
Talk about game plan, like, as you was saying just before. obviously now your game plan is not to open something else.
I say that, but I can't help myself.
That's it. So this is where I see myself as yeah. well, as the same as you, is like I've had the past, so yeah, 2 years ago I had to close two of the bakeries in central London, but at the same time I've opened one kind of at the same time. So it was in 4 months, closing two, one.
Are they all separate businesses? Or
no, same under the yeah. same. And having closed two, reopened one, it kind of like, then I was like, I'm kind of fed up with that.
Yeah.
Because people don't realize there's a lot of work behind all of it. So yeah. I mean,
closing is harder than opening.
Yeah, as well. It's a lot to take. But like when you said earlier on that, yeah, I finished with closing. I feel like the more we go into the conversation, the more I'm like...
You want to open a new one.
I'm starting to know you a bit more. And I feel like... It's not the end.
No, but I like
a challenge.
Yeah, I'm super curious, and I'm lucky that my first bar is still there, and people like it.
Yeah,
and the product is solid, and the staff now is the best it's ever been. No offense to all the ones that worked for me before, but I feel super happy with the people. You know, it's run by women, and I love it.
Yeah,
queer, female led. I love it. Yeah. It's what I want.
So it's funny because your game plan can change from. Kind of a not a mood swing, but like from a, I would say probably a seasonality or quarter, you know, from like maybe 2 quarters later, you're like, oh shit, there's an opportunity.
Depends. I don't know. Now I just don't feel I can.
Okay.
Like, you know, there's a moment where the money is gonna run out, and the problem is it's linked to my import business.
Yep.
So that is also bootstrapped. That started from just the restaurant turnover.
Yep.
COVID loans. Three times 50K goes a long way, right? So.
Oh, get so that. Of course, you got three different entities. So you got.
Okay. Well, we didn't get any of the windfall money, like 25K that you get, because our lease was too large. Like the rateable value was 59 grand rather than 51.
So over the threshold.
You can be 10,000 Starbucks and get 10,000 times 25K. Yeah, yeah. That's how ridiculous our country is. It's seen as a small business because it was done on the rateable value of each outlet.
Yeah.
Absolutely obnoxious.
Yeah, of course.
Pret a Manger, Starbucks, all the smart high street small businesses, chains, would have gotten 20. You should listen, taxpayers. You pay for this.
Exactly.
Mm. You voted for this.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to vote. Right? I'm not. I don't have. I'm a resident, but I'm not a citizen, so it's fine. But I'm just saying, you've got to start thinking about how you vote and maybe get a bit more angry.
But I mean, in France was much worse. Yeah, just to reassure you, it was really bad.
Yeah, it's really bad.
But, you know.
I don't know, my partner, she's managed with lockdown to get out of the mess.
Your partner have two businesses in Paris,
She had five.
Five business in Paris?
She managed to close three, buy out all the investors, and is way better off. See, that's the other thing. I've seen...
Like the two different...
I spent lockdown in Paris with her. That was really hard. I couldn't come back. Our son was being born in July 2020.
Okay.
So she was pregnant during lockdown when it started, and I couldn't go back to London. Imagine the stress.
Wow. You've got a crazy...
you got a busy life, huh?
I mean, I'm
obviously,
done.
Obviously, you haven't done it on purpose, but like it's great to see that, you know, you're still on your two feet and, you know, taking on all these challenges. And at the end of the day, like... when we come back to say you're saying like it's you're focusing about your life and your time, do you think it's big thanks to all of these kind of little they're pretty big, but experiences, do you feel like it's thanks to that you're like, okay, now I need to step back, see what I have, and
it's just like I've taken stock of that. Probably I remember I was in Georgia, it was probably a year before I sold Fair. The game plan started then. And before I sold the lease at Paradise Row and closed down that business, and the game plan started there. I was in the car with all these Georgian winemakers, four women, amazing. I import their wine, but they don't necessarily love chatting in English. So they're sitting in the front and two of them in the back with me, and I'm like in the back, and it's bumpy road and we're going to the mountains for a hike.
Yep.
And it was hours of like me just like, having time to think, and you can't really read or anything. And I went through everything and I was like, you know what? Like the logical plan is to maybe just find some balance.
Yeah, of course.
Because I'm, having a son and having a partner who's in the same industry, And we're living between two cities. There's only so much you can do. Yeah, we have no family either in Paris or in London, so we're on our own.
You're a business partner as well with your
no,
wife?
No, she's now, she's helping me.
Okay.
So there's, if it goes well, if it equal parts, it goes well with what she's doing, she's going to have shares.
Okay.
For sure. Okay. But I would love to repay the debt first, so that's another 200 grand. You know, so it's like, it costs money to open, and I need to repay that. And
of course.
It's not to the bank or anyone, it's all intercompany.
Okay.
But then, yeah, the big loans are sitting in Sagan Wild, and that needs to repay, because it's the parent company.
It's the parent company of all the other company. So she's paying the loan for all the other.
Yeah. So I need to, like, in the long run, figure out how to... But that's where the decision came from. Like, the import business started during lockdown. Yeah. It was an opportunity. And I'm like, you know why? And you know what? I might as well. It was, I think Peter from Newcomer said to me, you can always sell it to yourself. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I can. So I started with like 5-6 winemakers. We held our first portfolio tasting at Fair at December the 6th. This was before the second lockdown. Literally, we did a tasting of like what I've worked for all the lockdown.
Yeah.
And then the government is like, oh, now it's lockdown. So, $2,500 of wine down the drain. No one can start buying from you because their places are closed again. So we started during lockdown. And we're now 80 producers. And it's my favorite business I got. I mean, I don't know. I love the bar.
Yeah.
I love both bars. I love every single thing that I have now. It's just, I think it's enough. It's better. And I've realized when I sold Paradise Road just now, coming back, I was like, ooh. You know what? There's so much inefficiency at hand, and there's so much space for improvement in each venue. There's years of work there. Maybe I just make them the best they can be. And that should be it. Like, surely I should be happy with that.
Yeah.
It's not like you got one brand. If I have three plus the import business, there's also a point. If you take yourself seriously, I can't go knock at the door at the Leprey where I've got tasting finally, right? It's been 4 years of this business going. And I'm about to maybe have an account at the Leprey, which is one of the best restaurants in this country. That's like a milestone for me, you know? So there's a point where I'm like, can I really keep on opening small bars and all of that if I want to be serious as an import? There's relationships with the 80 winemakers. Yeah. There's my two staff, Lorenzo and Mariana. There's the relationships with the 150, 250 trade customers. Yeah. And I am not even that present in it. Yeah. I couldn't. I was closing and opening places, so it's like...
So are your strategies of opening or just your general strategy in your mind right now, is it solely you taking decisions or do you have a team that you kind of rely on? So it's just you?
It makes things easier. I like to decide things fast. That's why I've had a partner before. I prefer working by myself and delegating. But saying that, there is a point where I need an operations person. That's just a money problem, right?
Yeah, of course.
So there needs to be enough space. Like by next September, all my HMRC repayment plans stop, and that will facilitate the income of an ops. So I can front load that and go a bit more into that. I mean, if anyone here listening knows one that is actually experienced, I'm not looking for GM level.
Yep.
Who has not done it before. I have a serious business. I've been a director for 13 years now. I need someone who can work with me. And I have probably one or two people that are interested, but we got to see. And but then it's about like delegating and they run it. Because, you know...
So obviously delegating for me is a huge word because it's something that you have or you don't.
Yeah.
If you have it, great, because it's a big plus. If you don't, you need to learn it because otherwise you can't... you can't move forward. That's for me, that's my kind of philosophy. You can't develop yourself without delegating. Do you feel like now that you're looking for someone that's going to be in the ops, let's say your right arm, right hand, right arm is in French then, your right hand. Do you feel like it's not a bit too, like, do you feel... You should have done it a bit earlier to get
twice. It was needed, you know, when we had the foresight trying to close one down. But first one is a guy I worked with at Milk and Honey back then, and amazing guy, Kevin, one of my best friends, and former flatmate. I know him since I moved to London. And he has a bar called Satan's Whiskers and lost his other very serious ops job. during lockdown, and I was like, oh, why don't you come on board? He helped me with fare, closing down fare. He needed some serious high-level, you know, help. Mm. And even then, it was the most stressful thing. Because I opened the import business at the same time. That was a lot of work too. Now it's running, but you know, in the beginning, you got to like travel, taste wine.
And, it's
like,
crazy.
And it's a lot of stuff. So licensing, everything. And
just
so
a question. Do you think, because we're talking about how challenging it is, the hospitality, like opening bars, restaurants. For personally, I've been in both restaurant and import, and now I'm in import. Do you think import is more challenging than running a one bar?
Well, so that just depends, right? The hard work about being an import is two or three things. You got to build somewhat some trust from your customers and from the winemakers, right? Because otherwise you're not going to get good winemakers or you're not going to get the good customers because it's competitive. But I had a bar for 10 years. And it's a bar that a lot of people has meant something to during their journey in wine. And so that's why when it came to naming it and it was lockdown and we had to move fast, I just called it Segrand Wine. It was a pun because the Wild is no longer in the business. And the first logo was like Wild crossed out and Wine. We didn't do that. I want to change the name. I don't think it's any beneficial. It's a bit too gimmicky and it's a bit too natural wine. I don't know. I'm thinking of a name, but not yet.
Yeah,
it needs like another year and a lot of my brain to think about. I want a name that's good. Like Modal is a good name. You know, Uncharted is a good name. Yeah. Vine Trail is a good name. I don't know, but I want a serious name. I like my business. I think we have a highly relevant book, but it's more, I don't know. The hard part was gaining trust from customers.
Yeah.
And if you from day one have good customers because they trust you or they trust your palate, they know that you're not going to sell them fucked up wine. Or like wine that's aligned to their ethos, then you're like, okay. The other hard part was probably convincing winemakers to work with you. And the third hard part is to have the cash flow to pay the winemakers on time. And for the first 2 years, I paid every winemaker up front.
Really? Up front, every time?
Wow. Now I can't. It's like now, because if you grow, we grew 40% year on year. Now I have to stop growing. That's what I mean. I have to like, this year is, because if you grow 40%, well, an import business makes 30 at best, right? Before samples, before expenses. Then you have your salaries. I don't pay myself ever. My other two staff have been paid out of the restaurant, which are closed. So now they can't be paid by the restaurant anymore. That restaurant, for disclosure, wasn't bankrupt. I just wanted to not have the complexity anymore. And I regret it a few times, but it paid for Lorenzo and Mariana. So that's solid. So, and they paid me a small income. But I was done. It was 10 years and I knew that sales were going down. And my head chef quit. It was the third or fourth head chef in the decade that we've been there. And I put it on the market to see what's up. Not open market, not like what we did with Fair, but it was just like the agent asking around and I got a good offer for the lease. It was going to cover what I needed to pay off as debt, apart from the HMRC. So the landlord had COVID there too. That was the most annoying thing. So I was like, I can either wait. And for the next 4 or 5 years, when this business is literally going to be fucked because the neighborhood is not going anywhere. Not for me.
It's a special place, I will say, because it's very central, but not green is great. But it's in this small street next to the fuel station.
It's a lockdown problem. Before lockdown, people were still going to work. Now they're not. So a tube station, if you look at who goes in and out of that tube station, it's like, look, that area is, I don't know, 360 degrees council estate, so former local authority or local authority. It really is. And if you look at where the people who drink wine for 11, 12 quid a glass live, they just don't live there. And they used to travel through there when they still had to go to their work central. They might live in Wick Park, they might live in London Fields, they might live in Hackney Central, and the best is you go down to the central line. Well, that's no longer happening because they don't have to go to work, right? So they're staying in their beautiful areas. And it's more, it's making more commercial sense to be in an area. And probably when I saw how Bruno in Victoria Park, with not a single tube station around in summer, could do the same sales on half the rent, on third the staff, I was like, I'm done. I'm definitely selling that lease.
But because you got the community power, like the neighborhood, one bars, you know, working for you, you know, I mean, like in this position, which obviously like in Bethnal Green, next to the tube station, you're kind of losing this community help, you know, from people, because as you said, there's not that much people living
the
in this
crowd,
area.
You know, I looked around my restaurant, I'm like, I became a bit jaded. I would look around the restaurant and realize the demographic had changed. And I'm like, that's not me anymore. I've had my time here, so it's time to go. And it allowed me to focus more on the rest. So now it's like the time of focusing. On the import, it's, you know, like maybe just seeing like more fine-tuning references. In the beginning, we would take every reference from every winemaker to see what works. Now we might go, instead of having 14 expressions of one producer in Burgundy, and then there's overlap with the other producers. It's like, because we have a bit of a Burgundy focus. I like those wines.
Yeah.
And then we have a lot of island wine. We're about to sign up two more from
Ireland.
Highland.
Every importer needs their like niche, right? And that's so my niche is definitely not the southwest of France. I've never even been. So you know, it's pointless. Yeah, there might be good value wine, but I've been to Georgia a few times and I love Georgia, so of course I'm gonna import Georgian wine, even if it's like a really challenging job to explain to people why these wines are amazing. And I love wines from Lanzarote, from Tenerife, from La Palma, from El Hierro, from those islands. Old, I like own-rooted old wine. Like that's real natural wine. Wine that's not being grafted. That's real for me.
So
I have a wine from Bolivia that's like that. It's a tough sell, you know, but the wine is a 180-year-old vineyard, ungrafted, at 3,000 meters altitude. And the vines are growing in the trees. That they're vines for a reason. Vines are not meant to be on the ground or trellised. That's one of the most special vines I have. But it's, I don't know. Good luck selling that. It's like...
Yeah, but that's the thing after. It's always the way you're selling it. So when you say, for example, you import, you have two people working for the import company. Over sales, over marketing, over...
No, marketing is not much. We're not that good at it, I think. We do a bit of newsletters where the information... Okay, saying that, the website is on point. We started late with a website because we needed to build it correctly.
Yeah.
And I'm super happy with the website.
Okay.
Because all the information is on there, meaning all our customers don't need to look through a massive catalog. They now just get a list, which I love. On the list, it's hyperlinked, it's updated. I love it. It's like super efficient. Lorenzo and Mariana are... Lorenzo's been with me 7.5 years.
Wow, okay. In different part of your business?
Of course, he's seen all of it. Nice. And Mariana has now been 3 years. And I think we can continue growing another 40%, I don't know, or 30%, hopefully this year 10%, because we can't afford to keep growing.
When you say 40, you say 40% of turnover?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's too much.
Compared to last year.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
So why, what's keeping you, why do you want to not continue that 40%, because you just said
it means borrowing more money, and there's a critical mass where you, and I'm not going to name names, they're friends, but there's a critical mass of how much turnover I'm going to do, and if I grow organically, I'm going to reach that in 10 years, and that's fine. So I, no point fast tracking that, because I know that critical mass is there, and then it would mean you're going to hire another person anyway, either sales support or logistics, I don't know. I really like the size of it. It's highly efficient. We don't travel as much as other people. You know, importers get fairly confused about how much time is truly needed with your winemaker. Do you really think these... So I've spent 2 years in France. I know every Dick and Harry, like in France, loves to visit growers. They don't love to work with the agent, especially in Paris. So what do they do? They spend their weekends going to visit the domain. Then each winemaker I work with probably exports to a minimum of 15, 20, 25 markets, right? If they're good. That's another, each of those importers once a year visiting. So every other week you have someone. So can you really focus on making wine? No, a lot of them don't really like it. So I am a bit more of an open conversation with them.
Yeah.
And I go whenever they feel it's good. But you don't need to go every year. Then do you really need to take your customers all the time? That costs like $2,000-$5,000 each time. Maybe, but like not yet, right? So we got to grow to the stage where, and do we need to invite for fancy dinners all the time? Maybe not. You can run a highly efficient, neat import business that grows slowly. And I know where I need to get to. It's like in 10 years, I need to live from just that. So the idea would be to get to a turnover which can allow me to live from just that business and then fine. But if you do that too fast, you're going to, at some point, leave something on the wayside. Either the debt is going to get to you, the winemakers don't get paid on time.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's trouble. And you can only borrow so much money. Like, that's the problem.
Yeah, yeah, of
so
course.
So I'm
yeah,
still shouldering the bank loan. I'm still shouldering the 3 bounce back loans. So that's a load of, I don't know,
how
6
long
grand.
Got left?
Like another 6?
No, 6 years.
I think so.
Mm. But bounce back loan, wasn't it 5 years?
No, but you could
extend.
You didn't get that email.
Well, we've managed to pay off.
See,
at the beginning of this year.
See, I didn't want to. Like, the interest rate
yeah,
is solid.
It's too good. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but we only got one. Obviously, we got one identity.
Yeah.
So that was for us. It was all right. We had to borrow more money, but from a bigger. So this is where it was a disadvantage to have everything on under one roof.
Yeah, sometimes it is. That's what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. So we had to borrow money that was quite expensive.
Yeah.
And
I did that. I borrowed really expensive money. Funding Circle. I
there you go.
Like,
I've got the same bloody hell. Bullshit. You have the same portfolio.
I wouldn't recommend that. Like, that's what got me in the shape. But that's what I'm saying. I got burnt with borrowing money. I've taken my risks. Now it's time to take stock, realizing what you're good at. I think I'm fairly good at what I do now, so I don't need to fuck around.
Yeah.
Meaning, there's plenty of importers in this country who don't even speak the language of the countries they import from.
Yeah.
You know, because everyone started importing. Yeah. They might not have a network of people to sell to. And there's always an initial flurry of like, okay, you're going to do well because you're new.
Yeah.
And people in England love what's new.
Mm.
But for me, I feel I have a serious skills. My skill set is languages.
Yeah.
I speak the language of every country I work with, so that's 6.
Yeah.
And I speak it fluently.
Nice.
And that is my skill set. People have different skill set. Yeah, might be maths, yeah. Might be, but for me that's the one. And if you're building, if you're dealing in the currency of relationships, then language is the most important
tool.
Yeah, you can use ChatGPT. I use it. But it's not the same as you picking up the phone and speaking to them. Yeah.
Head to head is never the same. You're not gonna
someone else might
GBT
be poaching your winemaker
yeah.
or someone.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yep.
So it's. I think they say, and we only only just getting into the serious places. Mm. We only, you know, we've been in the cool places.
Yeah.
But to get into a Lepre or to get into like, because there's only so much wine you can sell within East London or with the equivalent places up in Edinburgh, Newcastle, Cornwall, Kent. We are in these places and they keep on, new ones keep on opening, but that's it. And there's a limited size to the market. So if you want to grow, the only growth can be lateral now, like into places where, I don't know, it's not my vibe, right? But like everyone wants natural wine. And if you have natural wine that's not fucked up, then that's a good thing, because there's natural wine is many things to many people.
Of course,
but so. Also the thing is like, so yeah, natural it's a thing, but like, would you, for example, if tomorrow you find like a really good wine, you love it,
It's
not natural at all?
Oh no, I can't.
You can't.
There's I have 2 blinders in the business, like, because you otherwise, you know, you've learned a bit now about me. I love new opportunities, and you need like thing I care about really is representation. So like, I would like to work with as many women as possible. In the beginning it was a solid 50%, now it's like slightly less.
Okay.
It's something I've always strived for. In the wine bars, each of them is now run by women, which we're getting there.
Okay.
And that's why the ops would be amazing to be a woman. It's just about representation. I hate going to the same old places and it's just the same old guys.
Like,
you
the,
know, in workwear jackets, I'm the same guy, right? And you're like, when is this changing? And for me, when it hasn't changed, is in where you guys are from, in France. The struggle is really there. The struggle is in Europe. So the reason I want to do this is more meaning to me than just the money, or more meaning than me, you know, having a retirement plan at some point.
Yeah.
No, the meaning is to give different people the platform to go, like, you know, people in their village might go, no, that's not for you,
because
you're a woman, but that's not, you know, so we don't talk about that in the catalogue ever. It's not a sales thing, but this, like, if you want to know, this is really the thing I care about. So the blinder number one is, can we keep with the representation the way I want to keep it?
Okay.
And blinder number two, well, it has to be affordable enough right now, but saying that, we're about to work with someone who's like not that affordable, and
is it
I love
still
it.
Possible now? in 2024.
If the vineyard is in a volcanic island, that's the steepest island in the world for its size, which is La Palma in the Canary Islands, and the vineyard is at 1,500 meters altitude and is 108 years old, then And he only wants to sell 180 bottles a year. And we're already picking up from Tenerife anyway, so we can consolidate. It makes the shipping cheaper. Things like that, yes. But then the rest, frankly, is about filling the middle. And with duty going up,
It's hard.
Everyone wanting to pay maximum 17 quid or 15 quid for a bottle they're going to stick on by the glass. And initially we didn't have any of that wine, but now we do, because it's, you know, frankly, not the wine I drink.
Yeah.
I love spending maybe 20 cost on a wine, because I know the £5 go in the wine and not the duty. But that's an education problem in this country. They should do taxation slightly differently, but it's not my, you know, whatever. Yeah. So there's a lot of money going into duty, and I feel with the new duty increase that's coming next year and with minimum wage going up, a lot of the businesses aren't going to be able to dedicate a small, medium-sized, tiny restaurant that has like 30 seats. Is going to see their wage bill increase by 15 grand straight up. Their business rates relief is going up by another 7 to 9. They need to find that 22 grand. Well, assume that they only need to find the 22 grand minus cost of product. They need to increase their turnover on that 22 grand by 55%. So divided by 0.55, because you got to pay VAT and you got to pay your cost of the product, 30% or whatever. So that's why 0.55. And you're looking at having to make an extra 50 grand gross turnover.
Of course.
At least. And in that's a grand extra a week, which for me is a lot.
Yeah, it's massive.
We're talking increasing 10%. That's way above inflation. So we're talking what? We're talking price increase. Now, how much longer can we... So we're going to increase prices. I have no choice. We're going to increase the house wine.
And I'm feeling, as a business owner, I'm feeling, I know my customers are like here.
Yeah.
Because we've been putting the prices up for the past 2 years. Maybe I've probably put my prices up maybe 4 times in the past 4 years. To cover our asses.
Yeah.
And there's so much you can do it until the customers as well are becoming, they don't understand why the prices increase. Some do, obviously, like obviously they see inflation, but for example, chocolate that has been going up this year, let alone twice, 40% and then 60%, and it's going up again. We don't see that in the news. So whenever I'm going to put my brownie up, they'll be like, why? Like, why are you going up again?
The main reason is we need to talk about that openly. Our main reason to put everything up right now is labor cost increase. Yeah. And anyone not aware of this is huge.
Yeah.
It's humongous, because the minimum wage. So we're one of the only industries where people with no degree in what they're doing can earn 45 grand to wake up and serve tables, right? Not being funny. And I respect the people that work for me. Yeah. They're incredible human beings.
Yeah.
But I now take their work much more seriously. I'm expecting a lot. And anyone not performing what I want, they're out.
Yeah,
I'm no longer... So you talked about earlier about staff shortage.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that anymore.
No, not anymore.
The money is very serious in what we do.
Yeah, yeah.
These kids earning 17, 18 an hour to, you know, pop a bottle of wine. So I'm like, you know what? And not paying full tax on 1150 of that.
Yeah.
Because there's no NI and there's no pension applied. So it's just, you know, PAYE.
Yeah.
They're taking solid money home. I don't know, 2.7, something like that, 2.8. And you're working your 40-something hours and you have a nice job and it's, it's cool. You're living in a nice area.
Yeah,
you have a nice flat share. Yeah. So I'm thinking, time to expect more. But the problem is the customers only have so much. Actually, that's not true. You know what? They have a lot of money.
Yeah.
The problem is a lot of these customers have a lot of money. Like what we talked again off camera.
Of course,
They're six-figure people. I'm not one of them. Yeah. So time that they pay. Instead of buying a second house, instead of all this stuff that they're doing, if they really want to keep on going out, like, I will not punish the people on a house wine level. That's not the idea. But I'm going to start punishing on the middle. Because like I said, I didn't make these choices.
No, of course.
They were all happy about the new government and they were all happy about anything. So like, go for it.
Have
fun. But for me, I have no choice. I can't just disappear. I have too much debt. Otherwise, I would have done it. So for me to repay that debt, I need to you know, that's your number one role as a director. Yeah, you are not allowed to go out of business, yeah, right? Yeah, so yeah. The problem of England is, like, people don't travel to it anymore because they think it's too expensive. Simply not that true. It's not actually that expensive.
Yeah. No. Compared to tourism, Paris or,
yeah. Yeah. Tourism is straight up down. Yeah. The exchange rate is in the tourists' favor. They still don't come. Yeah. So we don't see much gastro tourism as such.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we did last year.
Maybe
the Americans, yeah. But yeah.
I just feel it's like in the long run, you're talking about a diminishing pool of people still having the money.
Yeah. Well, the COVID money.
Like the money to spend in their household, in their, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling that's why it's bad. Better to not grow anymore, you know, as well. Like,
I mean,
if I'm being frank. But
for me, I'm in the same place as you. I'm concentrating on what I have right now and what I can use more with it. Although I'm, you know, there's plans of other stuff, but it's local, very local. So it's not going elsewhere and, you know, doing like.
But you have a different thing, you know, like the problem with my work is it's not sellable.
Yeah.
There's no multiple evaluation. Yeah, there's no brand. As in, if I did four Sagan Wilds, but that's just never what I wanted.
Yeah.
It's not what I'm not saying nothing to bakeries, it's needed.
Yeah.
Very different thing.
Yeah, completely.
No point opening another bakery with a different brand. Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Of the people I see killing it the most and I look up to them is, you know, products that have been repeated, consumer confidence and your. Because every time you're starting with a new thing, you got to get their confidence first, and then you got to retain it before your old news, you know? So and you get old news fairly quickly.
Yeah.
In this
city. Yeah, exactly.
That's so true. It's like, I don't know. Overall, I would encourage people to keep on opening, but I don't know. Yeah. Make sure it's better for me, right? I'm an importer.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's great for
but
you.
But make sure it's sustainable.
Yeah. That's exactly.
I think on this note, we don't want to get you, you to be late. I really like the fact that obviously it was a lot to say about entrepreneurial, you know, like side of things and in wine at the same time, which was great compared to the others that were really into wine as well. Yeah. But like,
we can do one about just wine.
Exactly.
You were asking.
That's true. But that was good. I really enjoyed it. But thank you so much for
thank you, Michael.
Guys, I hope you got, you know, some advices and especially like stories and experiences out of it. And again, if you could give us a little rating on the
Shopify
on Spotify, that'd be amazing. Also leave a few comments if you've got any questions, and also if you're a soldier and is looking for a job, Michael's looking for a good soldier.
I'm mostly looking for really like beautiful humans who want to work. The culture right now is amazing.
Yeah,
I feel we really gotten somewhere.
Yeah.
But that's what I mean about no more growing.
Like, no, of course.
Yeah. It's got to stay what it is right now.
No, completely.
It's so special right now. And I think we have something unique.
Agree.
And so I don't want to, you know, if you keep growing, it's going to start diluting down. Yeah. So no, it's got to stay special.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess if you want to work for a special company, come.
Like, if you listen to this, you're going to learn so much from Michael.
For sure.
We work at I didn't say that, but we work an extremely open book on everything, on accounting, on
great.
Everyone sees everything, which is great.
Yeah, this is the best way of doing it.
You're teaching people the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Something that keeps happening in the world of 50 best bars. Something we haven't even touched on.
Yeah.
But it's a very different thing.
Where can they contact you?
I guess email. I like email because that's my to-do list. Or Instagram.
Instagram?
I respond. Yeah.
So what's your Instagram?
Michael triple _.
Sager. Like Bruno and like Sager.
Bruno, it's also triple _. Because it's easier. No, I got the email, which is Michael at Sager and Wild. Or it's with an E at the end, wild.com. Or it's, the Instagram is good. Because I pick it up and then I respond right away. Yeah. Rule number one in business, respond. And a lot of people don't realize that.
No,
I don't know. A lot of my customers, a lot of people don't realize that it goes a long way to send a response to an email.
So much. We don't respond. We just ghost everything.
I've taken that very seriously. Yeah. I respond to everything.
Which is good.
Could be someone inviting me for, I don't know, something I really have no interest in. And I say, thank you so much for thinking of me. Yeah. You have to make the time.
Yeah, at least you're responding. Someone is taking some time to write you something. Just take a few seconds just to respond.
Or people, I've helped probably 6 people last year that wanted to start their own business and they wanted time with me and I've done it.
Right, yeah.
It's important.
Could be a consulting business, but I don't want, like, it was just nice to help people.
Yep.
That's good.
So, yeah, reach out.
Exactly. Reach out, guys. Tomorrow you're going to get 100 CVs.
Honestly, it gives me more joy. My initial path was going to be, I wanted to be a history teacher and a linguistic.
Okay.
So I love helping.
Great.
I love helping people. Perfect. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you again.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I hope you enjoy the opera.
Yeah.
No, concert. It's
the concert.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you very much, guys. And we'll see you next week for the next episode.
Yep.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank you. The Hospitality Podcast.